So thinking is a hugely important part of most human beings' lives. And it can be a very beautiful part of our lives. It can be the avenue through which a lot of creativity, a lot of wonderful expressions can come through us. It's an avenue for understanding. A lot of things. Thinking is wonderful. And thinking is the source of tremendous amount of problems also. And sometimes our thinking can be very confused. Sometimes our thinking can be very inaccurate. Our understanding is off. Sometimes we have beliefs that are carried on the waves of our thinking. And those beliefs can cause us and other people a lot of suffering and pain. Sometimes the world of thinking can be a very compelling universe, or maybe I should call it a black hole. You know, black hole is a star that's so dense that the gravitational force, so it's so strong that light goes into it, can't come out. Sometimes the thinking world, universe, star is like that, you know. Your awareness goes in, but it just doesn't come out for a long time. And people, you know, get lost in fantasy. And you spend much of the time thinking in fantasy. Or people spend a lot of time planning and living their life planning. Isn't there a line by John Lennon? Was it, like, how's it go? Life is what happens when you aren't planning or something? How's it go? What? Something like busy making the plan. Life is happening to you
while you're busy making
plans. Something like that, yeah. Life's life is what's happening while you're busy making other plans. And so there's nothing wrong with making plans. However, it's easy to get lost in the planning world and spend, you know, how many times we need to plan what we're going to say, or what we're going to do, or we're going to, you know, whatever. And some people find out in meditation, they sit down to meditate in the morning, how difficult it is to stop the planning mind. There's planning. Some people's world is the past, and their mind just, you know, gets sucked into the world. That's the black hole, thinking about the past. So thinking can be quite wonderful, and thinking can be a black hole. It can be quite dangerous even. So how we are with thinking is very important. And in its quest for freedom for all of us, Buddhism hopes for us to become free in relationship to our thinking, so that we can choose what we think, when we think, how we think. It belongs to a world of choice, rather than, in a sense, being the victims of our thoughts, or, you know, have the thinking world be in charge. And I would suspect for most people, there's some kind of mysterious process of thinking which runs the show. You know, it just goes on and on and on and on and on. Some people believe their thoughts. Isn't that strange? We believe our thoughts. Some people think their thinking is who they are, their essential self is their thinking. And they can't imagine who they'd be if they weren't thinking. I tell you, there's glorious things available to you. A glorious sense of self available to you when you stop thinking. It's just like the best sometimes. Of course, there's kind of numbing out, which is not what we want. And so Buddhism, in relation to thinking, we're looking for freedom. So you can choose, you can change, you can be free in relationship with your thought. You're not caught by it, you're not trapped by it, you're not pulled by it, you're not compelled by it, you're not, you know, all these things. And this becomes very important in meditation, because you really see, in daily life you go about and you're thinking all the time, and it's like the air that you breathe in. You don't see the air. You know, the thinking is just what you do, and you don't see them, hardly even know you're thinking. You're just like thinking. But when you start to meditate, there's this little bit, this observation that happens. You're trying to stay with the breath, for example, and you notice it's the breath that the thinking takes you away. So you start noticing the power of thinking. And you also start noticing perhaps the sense of compulsion that can be together with thinking. The fact you keep rethinking the same thing over and over again. Now, if someone walked next to me all day long and talked to me as incessantly as I talk to myself, and was as repetitive as I am, I would question their sanity. And I would beg them to stop and be quiet. I would pay them to stop and be quiet. Threaten them, you know, anything. And it would get really boring after a while, right? Just, boy, how can you keep saying the same thing, planning the same thing, you know, to, you know, just over and over again. But what's amazing, I find totally amazing, is that I can say basically the same thing, rehearse the same thing, you know, 500 times. And it's just as interesting the 500th time as the first time. That's the amazing thing. I mean, you know, you listen to other people and you get tired, right? But for some reason, like, you just, you don't get tired of yourself in the same way. Some of you, I know, are tired of yourself. I know it's enough already, but I think some of that has to do because many of our thoughts, if you pay attention to your thoughts, you'd find the subject of them is some way or other self-referential. I mean, some of you are, you know, writing, you know, software programs. So it's pretty, you know, not directly connected to self, but and probably a lot of your thinking has to do with something to do with yourself and self in relationship to others and work and what you're going to do. And self is very interesting, right? We're fascinated. It's so important. It's so desperately important. And so our thinking, expresses that sense of compulsion or strength around organizing and finding and being and defending and building a self-identity, self-image, self-representation that we have. And in fact, part of the reason that people are so caught by their thinking is we're actually not caught by thinking, we're caught by this idea that we have to constantly be making ourselves or proving ourselves or showing ourselves or defending ourselves or doing something around the self. And one of the wonderful things that can happen in meditation practice and a spiritual life is that compulsion to kind of be building self and making self and defending self and proving self and all this stuff, comparing self to other selves, can just be quieted down, can be settled. Some people find it very hard to do that because who are they if they're not thinking about who they are? But anyway, you still are. You're not going to die. So it's wonderful to have that all that thinking about self fall away. Some people feel like they can't because it's so important. The themes of what you're thinking about are so important. I mean, some people feel so bad about themselves. And it's so important to keep thinking about that. It's like, it has to keep thinking, I'm so terrible, I'm such lousy, I can't do this and that. You know, and it's so important. Why is it so important to keep having those thoughts? How about a vacation? Meditation is the vacation. Stop that. Or desire thoughts. You know, if only I can get this, then my life would be better. If I can get that, then this and this and that. And it'll be great. And I saw this advertisement, this and that. And why is it so important to keep thinking about these things? So part of meditation practice has to question the nature of thoughts. So I'm gonna try an experiment here with you all about maybe beginning to question your thinking. Try it this way. I'm going to do something which is not going to be psychic. I'm not a psychic. So let's get that out of the way first, okay? But I'm going to force you, all of you, every single one of you, I'm going to force you to have a thought that I'm going to kind of basically plant in your mind. It's going to be a very simple thought, basically just one word. Now try to resist, okay? I mean, you have to listen to me. You have to play the game, you have to listen. Don't go like this. You listen to me, okay? Because I'm not psychic, so I have to listen. But I'm going to force you. I'm going to prepare myself and get ready and just really make sure this word appears. You say this word to yourself. I'm not going to tell you the word, right? So that would cheat, right? Then you'd know, right? But you can't know what the word is going to be. So to try to prevent this word from happening, okay? Ready? Listening? Row, row, row your... How many succeeded? Not saying boat. Maybe if you weren't English, you wouldn't, you know, or something. But so here it is. I think a lot of you probably had boat appear, rise. Were you in charge? Who was in charge of that? Was I in charge? Were you in charge? You know, was it yourself? Was it your self-identity? Was it your true self that bubbled up? The thinking there happened independent of your sense of self, your history. You know, there's some histories there because you have to have heard it before. But, you know, just kind of, you know, you couldn't control it. It just kind of lightly, easily, probably just happened. What is a thought? What is a thought? How much does a thought weigh? Have you ever thought about that? Does a thought have weight? I think, if it weighs something, it's pretty light. I would suggest that thinking is probably one of the most insubstantial things in the universe. And it's one of the things we take the most seriously. Like we take it to be so substantial, so important. Why? What's going on there? So to question, what's this thing we have with thoughts? Why are they so important? Why do we hold on to them? What do thoughts represent? When we say something, we say a word, for example, or a noun, what does it really represent? There's a famous, somewhat famous expression in our meditation circles. So a meditation teacher said this many years ago to his student, and it's kind of spread from there. And the teacher said, the thought of your mother is not your mother. The thought of your mother is not your mother. What you think about a person, what you think about anything, is not really the thing. Is it an accurate representation? Is your mother really just a mother? That's all she is? You know, at some point or other, she was someone's lover. At some point or other, she was someone's daughter. Probably still is, or something, some ways. So, you know, who a person is quite fluid. And you have this idea that who she is your mother. You know, you have an idea, a concept. And those concepts are provisional, in a sense. But sometimes we take the idea, the thought, the image, the projection, so seriously. This is a true representation of what reality is like. You take them to be, take thoughts to be substantial, to represent substantial existence. One of the important, for me, little important areas of wisdom that I received in my life so far was had to do around planning. And I used to plan a lot. And part of planning was also worrying, being a bit afraid of this and that and planning. And that's part of the reason people plan, is because they're worried. So I'd plan and plan and plan. And at some point I noticed that most of the time that I planned, things didn't work out the way I was expecting them to. The meeting was canceled. I was so nervous about the meeting, I had to say something really important. Or I came to the meeting, it wasn't canceled, but then someone else spoke. Or I wasn't called upon, or, you know, or this and that happened, or they asked a different question, or, you know, it happened so many times that somehow or other, the way reality happened was not part of the scheme that I've been building up, the whole scenario. And after, I'm a slow learner, so after maybe, you know, 50,000 times or 100,000 times of, you know, finding out that my projection to the future wasn't accurate, I began to get the message. And I began to lighten up. You know, it's probably not going to happen the way I'm concerned it's going to happen. And for me, at least, that helped lighten me up a lot from my anxiety and fear, worry about the future and planning. And I still plan a little bit, but I'm not nowhere as compulsive as I used to be. And when I plan, it's just, you know, it might be. We'll see. It seems like it's useful to be a little bit planned here, but my plans might, it might end up not being needed, or it might be very different. So planning is also the world of thinking. So to question our thinking, question our stories. The mind is a story maker. Many people's minds tell stories. We tell ourselves stories, we tell stories about other people, about everything, and then we believe our stories. So the world of thinking is a whole domain of mindfulness that we bring attention to. And you could spend a lot of time exploring all the different facets of mindfulness of thinking. In basic mindfulness practice, all we're trying to do is to have a presence of mind so that we know we're thinking when we're thinking. And in that knowing we're thinking while we're thinking, we're not caught by the thought. There's presence of mind, and really clearly it's like you see, oh, there's a thinking. It's kind of like, and I don't know if this is an unfortunate example, because you won't like it, but imagine you go to a movie and you're absorbed in the movie, and then someone next to you coughs and you realize, I'm in a movie theater, and that's just light flickering on the screen, and you know, Humphrey Bogart just kissed this person, but you know, it's like I was right there for the kiss, you know, it's like I felt like I was being kissed, right? But it's just this light flickering, this guy's long dead, and you know, and it's just, you know, just this flickering of, you know, this light, and I'm in a theater, and you suddenly have, you kind of have this presence of mind to realize what's really going on when you're not absorbed in the phenomena. So the same thing with the world of our thinking. We want to have a kind of mindfulness, at least when we meditate, maybe other times too, where we wake up from the spell, we wake up from the enchantment, the trance that thinking can put over us. So we want to know that we're thinking. And that knowing that we're thinking is enough to wake us up and be a little bit, I don't know the right word, it's a little bit independent from the thinking. Like you're watching it, silent observer. Oh, thinking is happening. So to give you a little taste of what, maybe a little taste of what this can be like, is, you know, we say in Buddhist circles, we kind of say, be here now. You know, it's important to be present here now. And then people say, what about thinking about the future and the past? I can't do that anymore. You can do that. But when you're thinking about the future, you should know that that's happening in the present. When you're thinking about the past, you should know that this is happening in the present. And if you know that really clearly, like you wake up in the movie theater, oh, this is thinking about the future. This is what it's like. This is what I'm doing. There's a very different relationship to what's going on. And maybe that's when you start becoming free. And then you can choose, well, I think it's good to plan. I think I'll keep doing it. Or maybe, you know, I don't need to do it the 50th time. I think I have better things to do with my time than rehearse. So the simple idea of mindfulness of thinking is simply to wake up, to be mindful of what we're thinking. What happens sometimes when we do that kind of clear, kind of look at thinking face on, you know, head on. There it is, I see you. You're there. I see your thinking. Is sometimes the thinking just kind of dissolves. Did some of you have that experience in this sitting? That somehow, finally when you were told to pay attention to your thinking and it was kind of slippery, it kind of like slipped away? Wasn't that interesting? There's a variety of reasons for that, but one reason is that in order for thinking to continue through time, we have to be fueling it. We have to be fueling it. Engaging in it. If the fuel of attention is no longer going into the thinking, but rather the fuel of attention goes into paying attention, being awake, then the fuel, the thinking tends to fade away. It doesn't have any fuel anymore. Many times when we think, thinking is self-reinforcing. I think, for example, that you know, I might think that, oh, my car is kind of dirty. That's an innocent thought, right? But I latch onto that. My sense of self latches onto that. I hope no one here notices that, that here the meditation teacher has a dirty car. I wonder if I could rush out. Maybe I'm the teacher, right? I can tell people to stay here. I can be the first one to leave. And I can drive out before anybody sees. And this is a little embarrassing to admit this in front of everyone. So maybe there's another strategy. And I wonder what strategy. I'm always thinking. I'm always planning about things. Oh, I'm always so self-preoccupied with my self-image. And I need to do something. I need to meditate or something. So here, somehow there's a hook in each phrase that I'm saying. And each phrase is a hook or fuel for the next one. But if I can step back or stand above or kind of clearly wake up to the movie, this is what's going on, I'm thinking. Then sometimes if thinking is not too powerful, that thinking that won't have any more fuel and will just fade away. Sometimes our thinking is well fueled and well oiled. And it somehow it's gotten such a big charge, it's got this huge meal for whatever reason, that it's going to go on its own for a long time. Just gets, charged. Then the task of mindfulness is to be relaxed about that. And notice, oh, this is what it's like to have a charged thinking machine. And to feel that. What's this like energetically? What's it like emotionally? What's it like to have all this thinking churning out? Don't fall into the trap of trying to get rid of it. Just what you're trying to do is be mindful, clearly aware this is what's going on. Some of the things some of the very interesting things you can do around paying attention to thinking is you can pay attention to what it feels like physically. And we try a lot in mindfulness practice to keep coming back to the body, to the physical reference for things. So what does the thinking feel like in the body? Now, if it's really light kind of thinking, maybe you won't feel it. But if it's really compelling, it's churning out thoughts, you just rob the bank and you sit down, you'll probably feel it in your body somehow. You might feel it as tension in your forehead or temples or jaws or neck. You might feel it like 10,000 bumblebees kind of buzzing around in your head. Or you might feel like a lot of pressure or you might feel, it's all kinds of ways you feel it energetically in your body. So to drop down into your body and feel energetically, physically, tension-wise, what does it feel like to be engaged in a strong thinking? This has a couple of advantages. One is the body is not a story. So if you pay attention to the phenomena of thinking as it presents itself in the body, then you're less likely to be triggered by the story you're telling yourself. And it's very powerful. To drop into the body is a very powerful way of dropping out of the way we're caught by the stories. And the other thing is that if you feel it in your body, then sometimes the body begins to relax. And it's because sometimes, as you relax the tension or the energy there, the thinking kind of quiets by itself. The other thing you can do is to explore the emotionality, the emotional aspect of the thinking. So some people who plan a lot, chances are that there's anxiety or worry connected to that thinking. So notice the worry and then drop into the body and feel the worry in your body. And that's a way of waking up and settling and not being caught by the story again and settling what's going on. So you might notice, what is the emotionality that's somehow connected to that thinking? And if you stay with the thinking and the story making, just spin it, it can go on forever. But if you step out of the story into some other aspect of the thinking phenomena, you might learn how to be free of it. So into the body, into the emotions. It's very helpful. Last thing I'll say here is that, as with emotions, it can be very helpful when you're meditating to very quietly, calmly, say to yourself when you're thinking, say, thinking. Maybe repeatedly, thinking. Thinking. The very quiet, calm naming, it can acknowledge what's happening in a way that's much more clear and full than simply a silent acknowledgement or awareness. And the full acknowledgement, oh, I'm thinking, sometimes can really help break the trance of the movie. Oh, this is what's happening, I'm thinking. So even if you know you're thinking, you're trying to let go of and come back to your breath, let go of and come back to your breath, there might not be that full acknowledgement that's needed. And it's only by naming it that you have the full acknowledgement. Remembering, having a conversation. So it could be as simple as simply naming it as thinking, or if it's obvious that it's planning, you say planning. It's obvious that it's remembering, you say remembering. It's obvious that it's something. You can name it that way. Sometimes it's interesting to name it more specifically, because then you might be surprised how often you have those kinds of thoughts. There's a meditation technique, or aid to meditation. When people have some kind of obsessive problem in meditation, with thinking, like they're always judging, obsessively judging something, obsessively being self-critical, one of the instructions is, count how many times you do that. And for a lot of people, when they get somewhere up around, I don't know what the number is, but it could be up around 500-600 times, they realize, you know, they kind of begin lightening up. They start having a different relationship to it. It's like, wow, wow, I can't believe it. This is ridiculous. As opposed to kind of being right in it all the time, as if each time is new. So the world of thinking, it's a fascinating world. We don't want to be mesmerized by it. We want to become relate to it in such a way that we can find our freedom. Often thinking, the obsessive thinking, the caught up in thinking, is one of the primary causes of stress. And if we can learn not to be caught by the world of thinking, it's one of the primary ways of learning how to reduce our stress. So, what do you think? I talked a lot. Do you have any comments or questions? Please.
Where does inquiry come in? For instance, I might have a thought and I can release myself from that thought and maybe not be stressed out by it. But I can also go towards it.
Yes.
And really take a look at it and ask some questions about it.
Yes.
Is it true? And what is this doing for me in my life? Just to notice all of that around that. How does that part of reflection fit into the meditation?
Mm-hmm. There's no sharp line between mindfulness and inquiry, mindfulness and reflection. And so some people might do that naturally or might be inclined to do that little bit of that in meditation practice. However, mindfulness meditation is not inquiry, it's not reflection, it's not contemplation. And for people who are addicted to their thinking, which is us, all of us, you know, hi, I'm Gil. I'm a recovering thinker. Let's have some testimonials so we know that we're all in the same boat. For people who are kind of, you know, have this addiction to thinking, it's sometimes better not to practice inquiry in meditation practice for a long time. So they kind of break the habit of making so automatic to entering the world of inquiry and have the meditation be more dedicated to the silent inquiry, the silent investigation, the silent presence of mindfulness that simply knows what's happening as it's happening. But it is a Buddhist practice to do inquiry, and it's a fantastic thing to do to get yourself really calm and settled, to let go of the stickiness around thinking, get yourself really still, and then in the stillness raise an issue and see, and then have some inquiry around it. It's very, you know, it's a Buddhist practice in and of itself. But I think especially for beginners in all this, it's better to wait before you do it in meditation practice until you're really well established in meditation. But inquiry is a very important part of life. And so I always encourage people to do that. And I do it outside your meditation time. So you might do it, you know, have a certain set of time you're going to meditate. And then when you finish that, you might stay in your meditation posture and do it then. But you have a clear mark, so you don't confuse the two activities. Or you go for a walk. I do a lot of contemplation and reflection when I go for walks. It's a very important time for me. And the contemplation and reflection, I think, is much more powerful if you have, if you are able to be mindful, if you have the capacity for mindfulness, and you have the capacity not to be enchanted by the thoughts and caught by their world. Yes.
Some thoughts about when you were talking about if you're thinking, go into your body and that'll stop the story.
It doesn't stop the story, but it keeps you from getting re-caught by the story.
Okay. I've been trained in a form of Eastern energetic healing called Reiki, and a lot of that work is the philosophy that stories and memories are caught in the body and the energetic process of healing is releasing those.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the opposite of what you were saying.
It goes in both directions. So sometimes the mind, the thinking, affects the body. Sometimes the body affects the thinking. And Buddhism also teaches that a lot of things are held or stored in our body, in our muscles and anywhere else. And that part of the process of settling and getting into your body, waking up your body, relaxing your body, is the release sometimes of memories and feelings and thoughts. And so then it's important to be wise about those memories, to realize that that sometimes in meditation practice, especially for relatively beginners, sometimes long-forgotten memories can bubble up. And that's not wrong, it's not bad, it needs to happen. And so let it happen, but then don't be caught by it, don't be mesmerized by it. Just know, oh, memory, remembering's happening. Stay awake and just let it go and come back to the breath. And then maybe 2 seconds later another memory will come. That's fine, just let it come, notice it, and come back to the breath. Coming back to the breath is one of the ways which helps, keeps us limber and free, you know, not caught by what's going on, even though it might reappear.
I found it difficult to observe my thinking for very long.
Because?
Well, because I was noticing that I was observing my thinking, so my thinking stopped.
Good. No problems. You don't have a problem. That's
don't
great.
Make a problem out of it.
You don't make a problem out of it. That's great. And sooner or later, your thinking won't stop that easily. If it stops that easily, count it as a blessing. Every time you're involved in thinking, it stops that easily. Just by observing it, it stops. Then probably you have very little attachment to your thoughts. That's very good. But sooner or later, something will happen, and it's not going to be that easy. You're sitting there meditating very quietly. Everything's beautiful and nice. And you think about your first date in high school and how angry you are, what, you know, and then you suddenly you find you can't just let go of those thoughts. You know, what happened? And or, you know, you robbed the bank or something, you know. Something happened, you get fired or something happens, right? And so your mind is really caught. I have a friend of mine who is a very good meditator and very concentrated, great concentration. And he designed a software program that someone basically stole from him. And he said, it took me 6 months before I can get concentrated again. You know, deep concentration. Because his mind was so... That really caught him and really kept him churning and going. Is this making enough sense to people? All this is a lot to say, a lot of content. And my intention in saying all this is partly to challenge you to be curious and interested and to explore this whole world of thinking and to kind of maybe challenge you to kind of not take your old assumed attitude towards thinking as given. All of us have an assumed attitude or approach or relationship to the world of our thinking. Everyone has that. Very few people question it. Most people just live their whole life with unquestioning that relationship as if it's given, it's just the way this comes with being a human being, it's always this way. And part of my thing here is to challenge you, maybe it doesn't have to be this way. Maybe there's a whole different way of being with thinking and thoughts and relating to them. So, the simple thing to do with thinking, with meditation, is we sit down to meditate. We center ourselves, we relax a little bit, we breathe deeply, help us arrive. And then connect to your breathing and use your breath as the home base, as the anchor to the present moment. stay with the breath the best you can. Keep coming back to it as much as you can. If it's just kind of surface chatter that kind of carries you away, kind of light surface thinking, then just let go of it and come back to the breath. Come back to the breath. And then, if strong bodily sensations arise that are more compelling than the breath, then let go of the breath and practice mindfulness on those bodily sensations. If there are sounds that happen that are more compelling than the bodily than the bodily sensations and more compelling than the breath, then do listening meditation. Just let the awareness be open and relaxed and just take that in. If there are feelings or emotions that become more predominant, then let go of the breath and just do mindfulness of emotions and feelings. If thinking becomes predominant or compelling, then let go of everything else and then look the thinking head on. Just be present for that in a clear, direct way. Don't be for or against thinking. Don't be aversive towards it. Don't be just very simply. Just I'm thinking. This is what's happening. Be present for Be present for as long as you need to. If it's a very strong bout of thinking, you might have to be present there for a long time. And then you feel it in your body. You feel it emotionally. See what's going on. If you are with your breath, for example, and the mind wanders away to some thought, and you can let go of it easily, come back to the breath. But then the same theme happens again, and it's very repetitive. The same thing keeps coming up every time you're planning, every time you're remembering, every time it's a certain kind of thought, theme of thought, thinking. Even though you can let go of it easily, if it's repetitive, then you want to drop into your body and see what is the emotion that seems to be part of this phenomenon. Because the emotion is what's probably the factory for this kind of thought. And you can let go of the thinking, the product of the factory forever, but the factory is going to keep making it until you address the factory directly. So you drop in, feel the body, feel the emotions in your body, and practice with that. The idea in this mindfulness practice, it's supposed to be really simple. Even though there's a lot of content, a lot of information and instructions I've given you, it's supposed to be very simple. And to give a sense of that simplicity, hopefully, we'll end with a short sitting. So, put yourself in a meditation posture. Softly close your eyes. Take a couple of maybe deeper breaths and relax and settle in. And then feel a little bit your head, space between your ears, behind the forehead, area of your brain, and sense what is there. If there's any pressure or tightness or vibration, energy, or nothing, just kind of feeling of emptiness. And the next few times that you exhale, see if you can relax the thinking mind. Relax the pressure to think. let yourself be open, relaxed, and then become aware of your breathing. Breathing in and breathing out. And we're not going to do this for very long at this point, so just trust it's okay, just very simple. Follow the breaths best you can. If your thinking is in the background, so just humming there in the background, you're thinking, but it doesn't interfere with your ability to stay with the breath, don't worry about your thinking. Don't be bothered by it. Just stay with the breath, one breath after the other. But if the thinking takes over, then let go of it. Be with the breath. Distractions from mindfulness practice. It's simply something else to be aware of, to include in the awareness. So to be aware of what's happening instead of thinking about what's happening. And then as part of this meditation, I'm going to offer you an image. And this is a classic Buddhist image where a house, a one-room house, is used to represent a human being. It's a one-room house with five windows and a door. And each window represents one of the sense doors, and the door represents the door of perception that lets us know our thinking, our inner life. And in this one-room house, there's an easy chair in the middle of the floor. And when the person who sits there sits there very relaxed in the easy chair and notices what arises in the windows and the doors. A bird flies in front of one window, so the person is aware of the bird while the bird is there. An animal comes across the open door, and the person doesn't leave the chair to go out and engage with the animal or watch the animal or follow the animal. Just as long as the animal's at the door, the person knows the animal is there. So in the same way, we sit in the house of our body with six senses. And we sit relaxed in the easy chair of awareness, of mindfulness. We don't have to go out to anything. We just let whatever comes to us appear as it appears. Sometimes sounds, sometimes breath appear. Sometimes bodily sensations appear. We don't have to go to them. They come to us. Sometimes feelings and emotions appear. Sometimes thoughts appear. There's no need to leave the easy chair. There's no need to figure anything out. If it's there, if it has appeared, then it's enough just to know it. If it's not there, don't worry about it. Relaxed, at ease in your easy chair of awareness. Being easy as whatever arises is received in awareness. So for many people, it might be helpful to understand that mindfulness meditation is not so much a doing as it is a receiving. So being very, very receptive, being aware of what arises, and that's enough. We give a lot of attention to the breath, to ground ourselves, to stabilize ourselves, but then we're also very relaxed about letting go of the breath if something else needs, you know, as we receive something else happens quite strongly. And so it's not so much a doing as it is a receiving. And if you're spending a lot of time trying to figure out how I'm supposed to do this, you know, what am I supposed to pay attention to, and to relax and just go back and be simple with the breath until it's obvious that something's, you're receiving something being channeled in, the dog next door, the itch or something. And keep it really simple. I think that some people who are new to all this, it might be interesting to have heard these instructions about thinking, but trying to apply it might be kind of difficult at this point. You might be better off just going back and keeping it with the early instructions. It's nice to know it, but maybe for the next few months, it can be all you do is mindfulness of breathing. Maybe just getting stabilized is really what's needed. And you're going to keep it really simple with the basic instructions of the first evening about staying with the breath, or the first couple of days with the breath and body. Keep it really simple. Because if you include the instructions on thinking too early, you might just think more. You might just confuse you more. And it's fine to keep it simple and develop your meditation first as simply as possible. And then as you get that under your belt, then you can expand to include other areas like thinking and hopefully keep it as simple while you're aware of thoughts and thinking. If some of the things I said today seem interesting or challenging or something, or useful or something, I said a lot today. So what some of you might want to think about doing is listening to it again. I mean, it's on Audio Dharma. I don't know how long it takes to get up there, but a few days. Anyway, or listen to the last. Anyway, and you find on audio. Yeah, just so at some point you can listen to this again. It'll be up there, and it might be nice just to kind of, because my guess is you probably heard only a percentage of what I said, because it was so much, I think, today. And one of the most useful advice I received around thinking was the advice in meditation was, don't be bothered by your thoughts. Some people are bothered by their thinking. I'm supposed to have a silent mind, I'm not supposed to be thinking, this shouldn't be happening, I have to stop my thinking. That's being bothered by it. And if you're bothered by it, you just churn up more thoughts. Don't be bothered by it. And don't have the notion that if you meditate well, you're not supposed to have any thoughts. That's an extra thought. Let things be as they are and just be mindful of how they are. And in doing that, hopefully you'll find your freedom. There is one more handout. This is the last handout. It's there on the stage. I don't have a handout for the fifth week. But next week is the last week of the course, and we'll take it to another level of the instructions, actually in a couple of different ways. Practice as it seems fit with the instructions on thought, and if you have any questions next week about that, we'll have some time for questions, I hope. So, thank you very much.